Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, August 5th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, School Preparation. Sam Houston Collegiate Prep begins year today. School operated by Third Future will have on-campus students in front of teacher and watching online, by Stuart Doreen. Midlanders will get a sneak peek today at both students in a campus setting and one of MISD's newest partnerships. Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Elementary in Central Midland begins its 2021 school year today, with some students on campus and others learning at home. And taking over operations is Third Future, which is based in Aurora, Colorado. Third Future Executive Director of Schools, Zach Craddock, said Sam Houston officials will be ready for students this morning with one eye on student health and the other eye on student outcomes. Craddock told the Reporter Telegram, all systems are go for live and safe synchronous teaching. Houston staff has been on campus for 9 days, learning the system put into place last spring and continued through a summer session in Colorado. He said that the summer session on two Colorado campuses was especially important because it allowed for students to come together on campus. School officials were then able to test safety measures. At Houston, there will be 20 people in a class on campus. 10 of those will be in a classroom, and the other 10 will be in adjacent areas watching and learning, according to Craddock. Students on campus will rotate being in front of the teacher in a classroom and watching online. No student on campus will be watching from a computer for more than 2.5 hours a day, Craddock said. He said 70% of the 364 students in the Sam Houston system will be learning on campus. The campus, including the gym and library, has been transformed to allow for the overflow and other safety measures, Craddock said, as classrooms were too small to allow for social distancing requirements for the up to 20-person classrooms. Students watching from off-campus will be logged on and watching from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Parents and students picked up their Chromebooks and hotspots Tuesday evening. We have the technology, Craddock said. We have been working on it since March 18th. It can be done, but it will be a challenge. Craddock complimented Principal Brandon Thurston and the teachers for their professionalism and planning for the school year that promises to be unlike any other in Sam Houston history. Midland ISD partnered with Third Future, which operates charter schools in Colorado, to take over operations. Sam Houston went into last year having failed as a campus for 4 straight years, one of the longer streaks in the state. And like Travis Elementary's operations were handed over to IDEA Public Schools, the MISD board made an agreement with Third Future to take over at Sam Houston and potentially avoid a Texas Education Agency takeover or having to close the campus. Craddock said Third Future's instructional model is designed to help close opportunity gaps in student populations. The message is consistent with what Mike Miles, a Third Future executive and former Dallas ISD superintendent, said in February during an appearance in Midland. He told Sam Houston parents and others that Third Future's Colorado campuses have shown the ability to make up a full year of academic progress in just 5 months and demonstrated cases of delivering 2 years of academic growth in one school year. Great instruction increases student outcomes, and that closes opportunity gap, Craddock told Reporter Telegram this week. We want to prove ourselves. This article is entitled Midland Health, Monday Spike, Little Bit Stunning, by Stuart Doreen. Midland Health officials are prepared for a total of coronavirus cases on Monday that is higher than a regular day. After all, that number is the report covering the cases from the weekend. But what was the reaction from the 185 reported Monday by the Midland Health Department? 180-plus new positives is a little bit stunning, Midland Health CEO Russell Meyer said during his Tuesday press conference. Meyer said it is possible that there could be mitigating factors, including a lag in some reporting. But certainly the 185 confirmed cases is a concern. In terms of new COVID cases, Middle County appears to be in the middle of the spike. The 185 is the highest number reported on any one day, higher than the 135 report on July 20th, and even higher than the 155 reported on July 6th after the four-day July 4th weekend. Last week, health department officials reported 96. But the spike is more than one day. The health department reported an average of 352 coronavirus cases a week during the last 4 weeks. The month of July finished with weekly counts of 418 and 372 cases. That meant during those weeks, there was an average of 56.4 cases reported each day. The same situation occurred with the number of coronavirus-related deaths in July. At the end of June, the health department reported 15. Through July 31st, that number had climbed to 42. With 17 deaths during the last 2 weeks, there was an average of more than one a day. We want to reinforce, as we do to every time with the people, that wearing face coverings, social distancing, especially indoors, and trying to avoid crowds, especially extended exposure to crowds that are tightly bunched, Myers said. All those things still work, and we would strongly encourage people to continue to follow those guidelines, and if you haven't been following, to get on board with those guidelines to try to stem the spread. This article is entitled, Positivity Rate in Midland Has Been Around 30%. By Stuart Doreen. When Midland ISD officials announced that its campuses would start the school year with 4 weeks of at-home instruction, the metric used to help explain their decision was the positive test rate. Midland has a more than 21% positive test rate, comparable to Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio, MISD explained Monday. The district also reported Ector County has a positive test rate above 30%, and that infectious disease experts recommend both a local positive case rate of less than 5% and a 14-day decline in positive case counts as conditions for safely reopening schools. Given the level of COVID-19 transmission in our community, we will start the school year at home for the health and safety of our students, staff, and community, Superintendent Orlando Riddick said in a press release. Midland health officials explained Tuesday that the positivity rate, the number of positive tests divided by the total tests, has ranged from the teens to high 20s and even above 30% in recent weeks. Through Monday, there were 2,363 total coronavirus cases confirmed inside Midland County. That includes 1,264 Midland County residents who have recovered, according to health department officials. Of the 2,363 total cases, 67.4% were reported since July 6th. I think most of us have probably assumed that there would be some sort of ramping up of the back-to-school process, Midland Health CEO Russell Meyer said about the at-home learning instruction decision. I am not personally surprised that there wasn't some at-home type or some hybrid period. Meyer said, remember, they haven't been in school since March, and there are a lot of safeguards to put in place. This article is entitled, Midland Memorial Hospital, COVID-19 Patients Down 10 in a Week, by Caitlin Randall. Despite the growing number of cases in Midland County, Midland Memorial has seen a reduction in patients requiring hospitalization, according to CEO Russell Myers. There were 24 COVID-19 patients receiving treatment in the hospital on Tuesday, compared to 34 patients a week ago, Meyer said during a press briefing. 11 of those patients were in the critical care unit last week, and 7 were in critical care this week. Coronavirus hospitalizations are down by about half of what they were 2 to 3 weeks ago, according to Myers, when there were more than 50 COVID-19 patients in the hospital. It does appear that the new high numbers of new positive aren't translating directly into similar numbers of new hospitalizations, he said. We're hopeful about that. However, with 184 new cases reported Monday, Myers cautioned that hospitalizations could go back up again. "I don't have the age breakdown on those new positives," he said. "I don't know anything else about their underlying conditions, so we're going to remain hopeful that those are mostly healthy folks who will not end up in the hospital." The high number of new positives is concerning, Myers said, as that was the largest number of cases reported on a Monday since the pandemic began. He said it's possible the end of a testing backlog, meaning a large amount of outstanding tests came back at once, contributing to the number. Additionally, more hospital staff are back at work after completing their quarantines. Myers said 17 employees are quarantining after testing positive for the virus. On July 2nd, Myers reported that 41 employees were self-quarantined after testing positive. Those employees were from various departments throughout the hospital, he said. This article is entitled, "Cases in Midland County Top 2,400 from Staff Reports." The number of active coronavirus cases is around 1,100, according to the latest statistics from the Midland Health Department. The department reported another 61 confirmed cases Tuesday, bringing the total during the pandemic to 2,423. The health department also reported 1,290 of those Midland County residents have recovered. It also reported another 193 cases were under investigation, 140 unable to locate / refused, and 44 deaths. The new cases reported bring the total this week to 245. The Texas Department of State Health Services is requiring local health departments to switch to a new software for reporting case numbers. Once the Midland Health Department completes the transition, more numbers will be available. Coronavirus report. Cases Monday, 184. Cases Tuesday, 61. Total cases, 2,423. This article is entitled, "Extra Cases Down by 14, Deaths Reported," by J.C. Lewis. The Ector County Health Department reported 892 active cases on Tuesday, according to the Health Department website. The county reported one more coronavirus-related death, bringing the total to 52. There have been 2,496 residents who have recovered. The 20 to 29 age group still leads the county in the number of cases, with 853 positive cases, according to ECHD. The positivity rate in Ector County is 19.6%. The Medical Center Health System reported that the hospital was treating 26 coronavirus patients on Tuesday, according to a press release. Medical Center is treating 7 fewer patients than Monday. 11 patients are in the critical care unit, with 7 on ventilators. One of the patients is from Midland County. Medical Center Hospital has had 1,124 positive results, 4,073 negative results, 15 pending tests, and a total of 5,212 tests taken. This article is entitled, "City, Odessa Man Arrested in Fatal Hit and Run," from Staff Reports. A 41-year-old Odessa man was being held at Midland County Jail Tuesday on a charge of accident involving death in connection with a hit-and-run wreck that occurred July 23rd, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. Anthony D. Stubbs was identified as the driver of the vehicle, a Kia Sorento, that hit Midlander Andrea Romero Pruneda, 68, who was walking in the area of Rankin Highway and Walcott Avenue at about 6 a.m. July 23rd, according to a previous Reporter Telegram article. The driver, later identified as Stubbs, left the scene of the crash without providing any information or checking on the victim, according to the release. Pruneda was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where she died. Pruneda is the 16th person to die on roads in Midland County this year, according to Reporter Telegram records. Bond for Stubbs had not been set as of Tuesday night.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, August 5, 2020. Showing her support. Raven Kleinbach places Joe Biden and John Mark Hogg stickers on her vehicle July 28 before parade through Midland. the Midland County Democratic Party and Midland Young Democrats are hosting a blood drive noon to 4 p.m. Saturday at party headquarters, 601 South Main Street. People can register to vote and pick up an application to receive mail-in ballot. Conaway to visit WTFB Odessa location. U.S. Representative Mike Conaway will be visiting the Odessa location of the West Texas Food Bank this morning, according to a press release from the nonprofit's communications director. Conaway plans to meet with Libby Campbell, Food Bank Executive Director, and then will volunteer with the drive-thru pantry team to help distribute the new U.S. Department of Agriculture farmers to families' boxes. The boxes are packed with food items that the USDA has purchased from national, regional, and local food distributors, according to the department's website. Conaway is the ranking member of the House's Agriculture Committee, the work of which directly affects food banks. Rays of Hope sets volunteer training. These select area volunteer opportunities and events are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. For more information, visit mssconnections.org. Rays of Hope is planning Volunteer Training Day, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., August 15, at 900 West Wall Street. To reserve a spot, call 684-5437 or email kworkman@raysofhopemidland.org. Midland Habitat for Humanity needs volunteers at Habitat Restore to decorate and set up displays to create a welcoming and enjoyable shopping experience. For more information, call 686-8877 or email midlandhfh@habitatmidland.org. Midland Community Theater needs volunteer ushers and front of house workers to assist with ticket taking, ushering, concessions, seating, etc. Symphony Bells and ROTC cadets may register extra hours at mssconnections.org. Washington Pool is open today. The city's pools, Doug Russell and Washington Family Aquatic Center, are open on alternating days during coronavirus pandemic. Washington is open today for 2 3-hour sessions, noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Passes are $3 and go on sale at the pool 30 minutes before opening. Passes are good only for the day of purchase. Tax-free weekend starts Friday. School will be starting next month, and that means it's time for back-to-school shopping. The sales tax holiday in Texas is Friday through Sunday. Items that qualify as tax-free include most clothing and footwear, school supplies, and backpacks. Purchases may be made in-store or online, according to the State Comptroller's Office website. For more information and for a complete list of items that may be purchased tax-free, go to comptroller.texas.gov. Show of Support postpones event. The local nonprofit group, Show of Support, which annually hosts 20 military couples from across the United States, has postponed the 2020 event that was planned November, according to a press release. Organizers plan to resume in November 2021. Today in Texas history. In 1961, the amusement park Six Flags Over Texas had its official grand opening day in Arlington. Today in history. Today is Wednesday, August 5, the 218th day of 2020. There are 148 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On August 5, 1974, the White House released transcripts of subpoenaed tape recordings showing that President Richard Nixon and his chief of staff, H.R. Haldeman, had discussed a plan in June 1972 to use the CIA to thwart the FBI's Watergate investigation. Revelation of the tape sparked Nixon's resignation. On this date, in 1936, Jesse Owens of the United States won the 200-meter dash at the Berlin Olympics, collecting the third of his 4 gold medals.
This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled Teachers Unions Head Toward Incomplete Grade by Rich Lowry. No other group has shown as much contempt for its own work during the coronavirus as teachers. Their unions are actively fighting to keep kids out of the classroom and also to limit remote instruction, lest it require too much time and attention from people who are supposed to be wholly devoted to educating our children. This has been a wrenching time in the U.S. labor market, with tens of millions thrown out of work, and also an inspiring one. Workers we never before would have thought of as essential, grocery store employees, delivery guys, meatpacking workers, have kept absolutely necessary parts of the economy operating, even while most of their fellow Americans were staying home. Not only have doctors and healthcare workers put themselves on the line, cops and firefighters have done the same. It's not correct to say all of these people have done their jobs uncomplainingly. Many have worried, understandably, about their safety and wanted more protections, but all have shown up. All have been there during the horrific spring outbreak, during a brief respite, and during the current summer resurgence. Anyone who doesn't acknowledge our debt to them is a thoughtless ingrate. Then there are teachers' unions. Theirs has been a diametrically opposed approach to everyday heroes of America. Their first and last thought has been of their own interests. They have thought to limit their labor while still getting paid, at the ultimate cost of the education of kids who may never fully make up the gaps in their learning during their time out of the classroom. Obviously, any gathering of people has its risks, and school districts should make every reasonable accommodation to the realities of the pandemic. There are many teachers who are better than their unions, or not members of a union at all, and some are truly at high risk from the virus. All this is true enough, and yet the unions have represented institutional laziness and selfishness at a time of incredible strain for parents across the country. The unions have a handy foil in President Donald Trump, who has taken up the cause of school reopening with his usual deftness, which is to say, none at all. But it shouldn't require wearing a MAGA hat to acknowledge the benefits of in-person instruction, and the experience of other advanced countries suggests it carries low risks. The American Academy of Pediatrics released a statement in June saying that it, quote, strongly advocates that all policy considerations for the coming school year should start with a goal of having students physically present in school, unquote. As a rebuke to Trump, it issued a subsequent statement with the biggest teachers' unions saying politics should be kept out of reopening decisions. The New York Times has cited research suggesting that the cancellation of classes in the spring cost students a significant portion of their learning for the year, and they might be 7 months behind the curve. Online learning, especially for younger kids, is a poor substitute for being in the classroom, and many districts didn't even offer that. As states and localities try to avoid a repeat of that debacle, many unions are throwing every obstacle in the way. In California, the unions pushed to delay students coming back to the classroom, and in Los Angeles, the union has been negotiating to limit the time teachers spend on online instruction, too. Unions around the country have offered endless excuses why they can't even do a simulacrum of their job. Teachers might be abashed about their appearance teaching by video from home. The privacy of teachers might be violated if video instruction is recorded for use by parents and their kids at a convenient time. Teachers can't handle simultaneous classroom and video instruction. If the teachers' unions get their way, teachers' letter grade during this crisis will be a shameful incomplete.
Hello, this is Michael. I'll be reading the first three obituaries published today in the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, August 5th. Alex Adrian Lujan. Alex Adrian Lujan, 32, of Midland, passed away on Friday, July 31st. Viewing will be held from 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday, August 6th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, August 7th at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church, with burial following at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Alex was born December 6th, 1987, to Norma and Thomas Lujan in Midland. On December 3rd, 2007, he became a father to his daughter Yasmin. He is survived by Father Thomas Lujan, Mother Norma Benavides, stepmother Elder Lujan, sister Stephanie Ramirez, brother-in-law Julian Ramirez, brothers Miguel Lujan and Nicholas Lujan, and daughter Yasmin Lujan. He is preceded in death by sister Cindy Lujan, grandfathers Manuel Benavides and Ventura Orozco, and wife Roxana Tarango. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Cynthia Cindy Bennett, age 60, of Midland, passed away August 2, 2020, in Midland. Cindy was born May 3, 1960, to Mary and Danny Bennett in Odessa. Cindy is preceded in death by her father, Danny Bennett. She is survived by her mother and stepfather, Mary and Gary Harris, stepsister Kim Van Sicklin of Dallas, stepbrother Brian and wife Michelle Harris of Round Rock, stepmother Jeanette Bennett, and her cousin Max Wilson. Graveside services will be at 10 a.m. Friday, August 7th, 2020, at Sunset Memorial Gardens with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Odessa Humane Society, 7012 West Mockingbird Lane, Odessa, Texas, 79763. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. David G. Luna. David G. Luna went home to be with the Lord on Saturday, August 1st. He was born July 14, 1955, in Artesia, New Mexico, to Francisco B. Luna and Maria G. Luna. David married Norma Natera Luna in 1983 and had one daughter, Brenda Luna. David is survived by his wife of 36 years, Norma Natera Luna, daughter Brenda Luna of Midland, grandson Giovanni J. Meza, and granddaughter Camila L. Sanchez. David is also survived by his brothers, Frank Luna and Johnny Luna, sisters Dora Gonzalez, Elvira Portillo, Elva Hinojos, Maggie L. Herrera, and Mary Jane Luna, along with each of their families. David is preceded in death by his brother, Martin Luna, his mother, Maria G. Luna, and father, Francisco B. Luna. Rosary will be held at 7 p.m. Wednesday, August 5th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, August 6th, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Gloria D. Clemens. Ms. Gloria D. Clemens, 61, of Denton, Texas, passed away on July 24, 2020. Gloria was born May 19, 1959, in Midland, Texas, to Gloria Conley in Midland, Texas, and Ernest Joe Clemens, Sr. Gloria graduated from Midland High School in 1979. Gloria is preceded in passing by her father, Benjamin C. Conley, Jr., Ernest Joe Clemens, Sr., and grandparents. Gloria leaves to cherish her memory her mother, Gloria Conley Jones, stepfather, Reverend Julius Jones, two sisters, Terry Wallace and Donna Baker, as well as three brothers, Ernest Clemens, Darrell Conley, and Benjamin Conley III. She also leaves four nephews, two nieces, six great-nieces, three great-nephews, and a host of relatives and friends. Private graveside services will be held Thursday, August 6, 10 a.m. at Fairview Cemetery. Due to the current COVID-19 epidemic, services will be limited to immediate family only. John Adam Ellsworth Boswell. John Adam Ellsworth Boswell of Midland, Texas, age 49, passed away on Saturday, August 1st, 2020. John was born August 25, 1970, in Houston and grew up along with his siblings before moving to Midland in 1972. He is preceded in death by his brother George Stanley Boswell and his parents, Ellsworth R.G. Boswell and Mary Ray, his father-in-law, Walter Scott Brewer III. He is survived by his wife of 16 years, Leslie Brewer Boswell, son Aidan Radford Scott, daughter Nora Ray Lynn, sisters Annette Marie Hall and Rosalind Suzanne, brothers Thomas Patrick and Paul Michael, mother-in-law Lynn Brewer, sister-in-law Stephanie Jones, brother-in-law Walter Scott Brewer IV, many nieces and nephews. A rosary will be held at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland on Thursday, August 6th at 7 p.m., followed by a celebration of life at Mid-Cities Community Church, 8700 State Highway 191, on Friday, August 7th at 1 p.m. Masks are required at both services. The Brewer-Boswell family wishes to convey their gratitude for the outpouring of love, prayers, and support during this time. In lieu of flowers and in John's memory, donations may be made to Share and Bynum School, or the charity of your choice, are very much appreciated. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Evelyn June Davis Kirk. Evelyn June Davis was born November 4, 1933, in Lowell, Indiana, the daughter of Harold Sorensen and Agnes Junglus Sorensen. She was preceded in death by her husband of 53 years, Leon Davis, April 2007, and her second husband, Jack Kirk, July 2013. She was also preceded in death by a son, Todd Davis. Evelyn is survived by sons Harold Davis and wife Alexa of El Reno, Oklahoma, Brian Davis and wife Jennifer of Antlers, Oklahoma, daughters Cherise Daniels and husband Greg of Price, Utah, sisters Ruthie Studer of Marshall, Illinois, and Sue Ann Bell of Wheatfield, Indiana, 17 grandchildren and 22 great-grandchildren, along with many other friends and relatives. Funeral services, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Hugo, Oklahoma, Tuesday, August 4, 2020, 2 p.m., officiating Herb Bundy, Internment, American Heritage Cemetery, Midland, Texas, 9 a.m., Thursday, August 6th. Terry Lee Jacobs, December 18, 1947 to August 2nd, 2020. Our beloved husband, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, brother, and friend to many, Terry Lee Jacobs passed into his Savior's arms Sunday evening, August 2nd, 2020, at Midland Memorial Hospital. Godly, humble, honest to a fault, Terry was born on December 18, 1947, to Elda Beth and William Leon Jacobs in Shattuck, Oklahoma. Left to carry on his legacy and love are his blessed family, his wife Carol Cloninger Jacobs, daughter Lisa Jacobs Watley and her husband Keith Watley of Midland, daughter Courtney Jacobs Neely and her husband Jeff Neely III of Amarillo, son Josh Jacobs and his wife Erin Jacobs of Midland, daughter Julie Jacobs Donnelly and her husband Garrett Donnelly of Midland. His grandchildren love their pops. Left to cherish pops are four grandsons, four granddaughters, and three great-grandchildren. Terry is survived by his brother Randy Jacobs and wife LaRonda Jacobs of Hackett, Arkansas, sister Sharon Raven and her husband Glenn Raven of Beaver, Oklahoma, brother Tim Jacobs and wife Janie Jacobs of Hooker, Oklahoma, and sister Stacy King and husband Don King of Pocola, Oklahoma. The family will receive friends from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, August 6th, at Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Services will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, August 7th at Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Internment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Pallbearers will be Jeff Neely III, Keith Watley, Michael Watley, Garen Donnelly, Jeff Neely IV, Alex Jacobs Montez, and Josh Jacobs. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Death notices. Elvia Valens Galindo. Elvia Valenzuela Galindo, 58, of Midland, passed away Friday, July 31st, 2020. Viewing will be Tuesday, August 4th from 1 to 9 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be Wednesday, August 5th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by her husband, Leonel Galindo, two sons, Leonel V. Galindo and Leonardo V. Galindo, one daughter, Leonella V. Galindo, her mother, Maria Montoya Valenzuela, one sister, four brothers, and nine grandchildren. Philip McNeil. Philip McNeil, 59, of Midland, passed away August 1, 2020. He was born to Lucille and George McNeil in Houston, Texas, on July 14, 1961. There are no services scheduled at this time. Rigoberto Jr. Ontiveros Garcia. Rigoberto Jr. Ontiveros Garcia passed away Sunday, August 2, 2020. Visitation will be held Thursday, August 6, from 1 to 9 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel, 1502 North La Mesa Road. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, August 7th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Survivors include his parents, Rigoberto and Elsa Garcia, paternal grandparents, Aiden T. Ontiveros and Elvira C. Ontiveros, parental grandfather, Isabel Garcia, son, Asen Lucas Garcia, one sister and two brothers. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, August 5th, 2020. OHS student ACES, A-C-T, by Ruth Campbell. In a rare and difficult feat, Odessa High School student Akash Agirakula scored a perfect 36 on the ACT college entrance test, which he took in June. Angirikula, who is 16, turns 17 this month and will be a senior. I was pretty surprised. I wasn't expecting it. A perfect score. I was hoping to get maybe like a 34 or 35. I was shocked. I just ran to tell my mom. I saw it on my computer. I just decided to check randomly. I didn't even know the scores had come out. So I just looked and I just immediately ran to tell my mom, he said. Akash is the son of Mohana and cardiologist Dr. Manohar Angirakula. His mother, Mohana, was over the moon about Akash's score. I was also hoping for a 35 or so, but to get a 36, that was really awesome. I know he worked hard, but still it doesn't matter. 35 would have been just great. It was definitely awesome, she said. The test includes math, English, reading, and science. Akash Angirakula wrote an essay as well. Each section is scored on a scale of 1 to 36. A student's composite score is the average of the four test scores, an Ector County ISD news release said. The score for ACT's optional writing test is reported separately and is not included within the ACT composite score. To prepare, every weekend, 3 or 4 months before the test, Akash Angirakula took practice tests and scored them. He had taken the SAT last December, but didn't do as well as he would have liked, so he took the ACT in June. Colleges accept both tests. Based off the questions I got wrong, those are the areas I'd work on. When I started out, I was really weak on science, so I really tried to work hard on the science section. I did extra sections of science so that I could just really improve my skills in that area. For math, I'd already had a lot of experience from the SAT, so I didn't have to focus as hard on that. The same with English. I was pretty strong from the SAT already, so I really just had to focus on the science and a lot of repetition doing the test every week, he said. Currently, Akash said he's undecided about where to go to college, but is leaning toward the University of Texas at Austin. I think Austin is just a cool place to be, he said. He has an older brother, Anish, and an older sister, Askika. Mohana Angirikula said Anish is now in residency right now at Baylor Scott & White Health in Temple, and Askika is a third-year medical student at UT Southwestern. Akash said he is leaning toward studying medicine right now. Mohana said all her children went to Reagan Elementary, Bowie Middle School, and OHS. She added that the students cannot reach their goals without the teachers, so we're grateful to the teachers and school district, she said. Along with teachers, Akash Angirikula said he got support from family members who called and texted him. Learning remotely, he said, actually made it easier for him to prepare for the ACT because he was at home more. Although he will be starting the year learning virtually, Akash said he is looking forward to his senior year. His mom said they are going to wait for 6 weeks to see how things go. I wish it could be like a normal year, but I'll deal with whatever comes, he said. He is an international baccalaureate diploma candidate at OHS. According to the ACT, less than one half of 1% of all test takers earn the top score. Among U.S. high school graduates in the class of 2019, just 4,879 out of nearly 1.8 million students who took the ACT earned a composite score of 36, the release said. Akash was scheduled to take the ACT in April, but the exam was canceled due to COVID-19. It was rescheduled for June, and that is when he took it and earned his perfect score. In December, Akash scored a perfect 800 in the math portion of the SAT. In a letter to Akash recognizing his achievement, ACT CEO Martin Ruerda stated, "Your achievement on the ACT is significant and rare. Your exceptional scores will provide any college or university with ample evidence of your readiness for the academic rigors that lie ahead," the release said. Commissioners hear idea of criminal DA's office. During the Ector County Commissioner's Court budget hearing Tuesday, County Attorney Dusty Gallivan broached the idea of creating a criminal district attorney's office and hiring a civil attorney along with his budget request. County Judge Debbie Hayes said the budget hearings for county departments, commissioners, and law enforcement were scheduled for Tuesday and Wednesday and next Monday. There will be a Commissioner's Court meeting August 11th. Hayes said she hopes to wrap up everything that day, but it might go into August 12th. Today's hearing started at 8:30 a.m. in the County Administration Building, 1010 East 8th. Hayes last week presented her plan for $67.1 million in general fund expenditures. It was an increase from the current fiscal year's $66.5 million. But Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers said he and Commissioners Eddie Shelton in Precinct 1, Greg Simmons in Precinct 2, and Armando Rodriguez in 4 will make alterations before the budget is adopted in September. Every year, this is a process we go through, and then after it's posted, any changes, any last-minute pleas, when we do open hearings on the budget, then individuals will have a second chance to persuade the court to change, along with the public, Hayes said. She said the county still has a hiring freeze, but Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers said there are some departments that have been deemed essential, such as law enforcement, the health department, IT, and building maintenance. Gallivan was unopposed for district attorney, and his first assistant, Greg Barber, was unopposed for county attorney. Gallivan said his budget request for 2020-21 is $1.9 million, compared to $1.8 million last year. The only change, he said, is his request for a civil attorney, because the expertise of lawyers in his office is mainly criminal law. Combining the county and district attorney would create a criminal district attorney's office, which many larger counties have. That way, you have one office that deals with misdemeanors and felonies. We're one of the few counties that has them separate, Gallivan said. He added that there has to be legislation to authorize it. If all goes well, the change will take place in October 2021. So once we get through budget, we'll present a resolution to the court. If they approve it, we'll present that to Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, and then he'll present it and do what he's got to do, Gallivan said. Having two offices, there's some redundancy in positions that you wouldn't need. In addition, unfortunately, individuals who break the law don't necessarily just commit a misdemeanor or just a felony. They usually have both, and right now it's very difficult for us to coordinate those because we're different offices. So once we're combined, you could have one prosecutor take care of everything, he said. Barber will be part of Gallivan's office once the transformation occurs. Barber added that they will be able to share resources, and if someone is shorthanded and there is a large court docket, they can shift over instead of having people in different spots. Dusty and I have talked about it, Barber said of the proposed change. I've been his first assistant for almost 6 years now. I came from Lubbock originally. They have a criminal district attorney's office. I've seen how it works up there, and Dusty and I talked about it. I'm in full agreement with him that it's better all around for Ector County to have all those resources put into one office. It streamlines a lot of things. The judicial process will go a lot quicker, whether they're felonies or misdemeanors, and it also saves time and money. He added that they also won't have to have two separate offices. I'm in full agreement. It's for the betterment of the judicial system of Ector County, Barber said. Gallivan also presented a $3.5 million budget request for the DA's office. District Attorney Bobby Bland did not attend that part of the meeting. Amid the COVID-19 pandemic, courts had shut down. Gallivan said the county courts returned to action Tuesday. Every week we do a jail change so individuals in the jail can take care of their cases if they choose to. Since probably about 6-7 weeks now, we've been doing it by video. So we go out there with a laptop since they don't have the equipment out there, have the judge on the screen, and handle it that way, Gallivan said. He also said in a text message that a jail chain is a specific docket where incarcerated individuals are given the opportunity to resolve their case if they so choose. This allows individuals to get out of jail sooner rather than later, saving the taxpayers money, Gallivan stated. Barber added that it's good for people on restrictions so they don't have to be transported to court in a van with other inmates. It helps stop the spread of COVID-19 as well, he said. Gallivan said one of the things his office is working on with IT is to have a way that attorneys can visit with their clients via video. One of the issues is some attorneys are older and they don't want to go out there. I get that. So they're going to have a similar system set up just for defense attorneys to use. They can basically make an appointment. The jail will pull their client, have them there, and they talked to them on video, Gallivan said. Ector to delay start of in-person classes. Ector College Prep Success Academy will delay the start of school until September 9th. The recommendation made at an ECPSA board meeting Monday evening was made in the interest of the safety of students, teachers, and families, an email from Principal Mitch Gehrig said. An Ector County ISD survey showed that a majority of our parents were uncomfortable sending their child to school at this time. This recommendation was approved by a unanimous decision by the ECPSA board, the email detailed. The school calendar will begin September 9th and end June 4th. This will ensure that students will receive the instructional hours required by the TEA. Ector will follow the ECISD calendar beginning Wednesday, September 9th, the email said. The Texas Education Agency requires at least 75,600 minutes of instruction per year. We were originally going to begin school in line with the district August 12th. However, we felt it best to delay the start of school due to the high positivity rate, more than 19% in Ector County, and the ECISD survey that showed 58% of Ector parents do not feel safe sending their child to school, Gehrig stated in an email. Ector is projected to have approximately 1,350 students for the 2020-21 school year and approximately 70 teachers, he wrote. Gehrig said the school is close to providing one device per student, but we are in the process of ordering more devices to ensure each student has a device. We are also ordering hotspots to help in areas where connectivity is an issue. COVID-19 news. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 3,440. Ector County negative, 16,557 out of 20,213 tested, with 216 pending, 52 deaths. Recovered, 2,496. Active, 892. Midland County, 2,423 confirmed, 44 deaths. Texas, 451,181 confirmed, with 3,884,848 tested. Total Texas deaths, 7,261. U.S. cases, 4,698,818 total confirmed, and 155,204 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Quick hits. Overeaters Anonymous. Overeaters Anonymous, a 12-step support group, has scheduled the following Zoom meetings. Sundays, 6 p.m. ID 964-152-377. Passcode WE. Mondays, noon. ID 420-773-870. Passcode 061284. Wednesdays, 8 a.m. ID 338-141-943. Passcode 026193. The meetings are free and open to the public. For more information, call 553-1031 or visit oa.org. Free back-to-school haircut. Coiffures, barbershop, and salon, and Lavish Barbershop have scheduled its fifth annual free back-to-school haircut event for local pre-K through 12th grade students from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. August 11th at Music City Mall Salon Shop locations. The Midland event will take place from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. August 18th at Midland Park Mall Salon Shop locations. Masks and social distancing guidelines will be implemented. To reserve your spot, call Coiffures, Barbershop, and Salon at 362-0050 in Odessa or 699-2033 in Midland, or Lavish Barbershop at 653-1440 for both Odessa and Midland. Anime Convention. Midis Anime has been scheduled from noon to 5 p.m. August 14th through 16th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th. Show hours, noon to 2 a.m. August 14th, 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. August 15th, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. August 16th. There will be celebrity voice actors, shop at an exclusive anime merchants and artists booths, idol performances, panels, concerts, workshops, meetups, and more. For tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/y6wm63RW. Conaway meeting with food bank officials on Farmers to Families program. The West Texas Food Bank received its first shipment from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's newest program to distribute fresh produce, the Farmers to Families program, last month, and welcomes the fresh produce as part of its goal to distribute more fresh fruits and vegetables to West Texas. U.S. Representative Mike Conaway, Republican Texas, met with West Texas Food Bank officials and helped distribute Farmers to Families boxes in the regular pantry distribution held today, Wednesday, at the West Texas Food Bank facility in Odessa. As part of the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, Secretary Perdue announced April 17th, the USDA is exercising authority under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act to purchase and distribute agriculture products to those in need. Through this program, USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service, AMS, is partnering with national, regional, and local distributors whose workforces have been significantly impacted by the closure of restaurants, hotels, and other food service businesses to purchase up to $3 billion in fresh produce, dairy, and meat products from American producers of all sizes. Distributors will package these products into family-sized boxes, then transport them to food banks, community and faith-based organizations, and other nonprofits serving Americans in need, the USDA website states. Deadline coming up for board position. Just a few days remain for interested residents to apply for the Position 4 spot on the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees. All applications must be received in the superintendent's office by noon Friday. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees is seeking to appoint a resident of Position 4 to fill the seat vacated by Doyle Woodall. The appointee will fill the vacant position until the next scheduled election for that seat in May 2021.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.